In this parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus answers the question, who is my neighbor? Jesus encourages us to show mercy. The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 10th chapter. Here's a story you've heard 1,000 times. Let's read it together, see if you can hear anything new this time. An expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he said, what must I do to inherit eternal life? He said to him, what is written in the law? What do you read there? He answered, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, you have given the right answer. Do this, and you will live. But wanting to vindicate himself, he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Jesus replied, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers who stripped him, beat him, and took off, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down from that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came upon him. And when he saw him, he was moved with compassion. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, treating them with oil and wine. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said, take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend. Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? He said, the one who showed him mercy. Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. The Gospel of the Lord. Happy 4th of July weekend to you and to our country. This year feels even more special as we celebrate the 250th birthday of America, the sesquicentennial. Way back at the bicentennial in 1976, when we celebrated the 200th birthday of our country, we had this big Freedom Festival at my high school on the football field, Little Cypress High School, north of Orange, Texas, in the Piney Woods. So everyone gathered at the high school, and people all ages were invited to dress up as their favorite historical character. And they were going to march around the football field. There was going to be an orchestra playing, and they were going to shoot off fireworks. And people really got into it. There was Betsy Ross, and there was the Statue of Liberty, and there was Lincoln, and there was George Washington. My brother, earlier that summer, out of the back of a Mad magazine, had ordered a Richard Nixon mask. And so, into this great parade of historical characters, my brother puts on the mask. He's got a suit and a tie, and he sneaks into the parade, and he gives them his very best Nixon. Not quite the American hero, but he was part of our parade. Even with the disgrace of Watergate and the political fallout, didn't it seem like our country agreed to press on, to move forward, united for better times ahead? What does it mean to follow Jesus today in a divided America when we are not united? Are we moving toward better times ahead? Stay with me now. We are divided. We want to win the latest political argument. We say the Republican Party has been taken over by white Christian nationalists, or we say the Democratic Party is inherently socialist. And even if it's not so politically extremely divided, many of us are appalled by all the differing opinions we hear on abortion, immigration, race, gender, all those issues that seem to divide us. A good faith question to ask is how might we talk caringly without sacrificing relationships with our family and friends? We do not need airtight, unimpeachable rhetoric. We do not need to win over Republicans or Democrats to our side. What we need is a total reorientation so that our ultimate goal is not winning an argument or even winning an election, but instead winning the world, bringing healing to a hurting world. That is our mission. That is our purpose. That's how we love God, love others, serve. How do we bring the healing power of Jesus Christ to a hurting world? This is not only the most effective path forward, but I believe this is what it means to be Christ-like, to be like Jesus. If Jesus' goal was to win people over to a political strategy, he failed miserably. If his goal was to bring democracy to the Middle East, mission not accomplished. But if his goal was to bring healing, to bring shalom to a world straining under the weight of empire, oppression, sickness, sadness, and scarcity, well, my gosh, he was the greatest leader the world has ever known. And in that way, I believe that we are invited to be like Christ. We are invited specifically to take up our cross and to follow him. I hope you can see that this is pointing to hundreds, if not thousands, of opportunities to care about the welfare of others. It's a scary proposition because anything other than self-interest might involve sacrifice. It might involve pain or even discomfort. And if it were not for an earthy, practical theology of the resurrection, it would be insanity. If life were limited to what we amass here, we would be fools not to hoard and protect. But if we die with Christ, as Paul's second letter to Timothy promises, we will live with Christ. And this is the rhythm of death and resurrection. And this is not a one-and-done ticket to heaven. It's the foundational motif of our lives, and we must choose it over and over again. As Luther said, we die daily to sin and rise daily to newness of life. So resurrection is not something we hope for when we die. Resurrection happens daily. Resurrection is the only way we can die to political advantage, die to power, die to privilege, and rise to mutuality, to compassion, to solidarity. Resurrection is the only way we can revive our dull hearts to love like Jesus. Mutuality is not some internalized decision to just love everybody and then retreat from the fray. No. Compassion propels us, drives us to act. Sometimes our solidarity is a vote. Sometimes it's getting involved in community organizing. Sometimes it's getting involved in aid work or organizing some sort of outreach effort, mission work. The great irony of modern American life is that radical compassion and connectedness would go much further to heal our divisions than any political movement ever could. So what does death and resurrection look like? What does it mean to die to self-interest and rise in the context of our divisive American political debates? Look to the Gospels. When you get stuck, when all else fails, look to the Gospels. What kind of story would Jesus tell in response to people who were literally dying as they tried to cross the border, or to the gun lobby, or to the starving, or to the homeless? The stories in the Gospels do speak to our current situation. I understand they do not offer a political solution, but they do affect our politics. Because Jesus' life was a life of nonstop pursuit of suffering people. He had to break social norms and religious rules. He was ultimately crucified as a lawbreaker, all in the pursuit of people society would rather forget. The lepers, the sick, the poor, the unclean. He did not always play nice, and he never set aside his mission just to avoid conflict. So while I do not think there is a political solution to national disunity found in Jesus' life other than caring like Jesus cared and loving like Jesus loved, I do think there is moral clarity here for all of us. because the stories of the Gospels provide vignette after vignette of what this dying and rising motif could look like in our lives. Dying, rising, here's how it looks. You were not made for the Sabbath, dying, but the Sabbath was made for you, rising. The Son of Man came not to be served, dying, but to serve, rising. You've got to lose your life in order to save it. You must die to sin to be able to rise up to real life. Just think, the Beatitudes, Peter walking on the water, Jesus calming the storm, the healing of the centurion's servant, raising up Lazarus, even producing new wine at the wedding banquet. These stories point us to dying and rising. That means dying to having it our way and rising to something even better. So please, do not prioritize all your political answers ahead of your commitment to Christ. Being connected to Jesus is based in dying, even to willingly die to our shared national interest for the sake of true resurrection, of unity and shalom. You've got to die before you can rise. Now, we can play nice and look the other way, but such an approach to national unity is flawed. What is our nation? Are we a melting pot? A city on a hill? Thousand points of light? A collection of immigrants? Tired, poor, huddled masses longing to breathe free? At some point, the suffering engendered by the prevailing national imagination becomes irreconcilable with our faith. What is the solution, if not unity, for unity's sake? Again, please hear me. Politicians want us to believe that politics is our identity. But I stand here today to remind you that your true identity, your only identity, is in being a child of God. Until we see the whole of creation, including even our enemies, as unified with us as God's children, we will continue to suffer and continue to tolerate the suffering of others. Our identity is in being a child of God. Our unity is in Jesus Christ. So do more than pick a side. Our national division is much deeper than red versus blue. It goes to our very souls. Now, in a comfortable, affluent, suburban setting such as ours, how have we inured, how have we numbed ourselves to the suffering of others so that we will not have to bear the discomfort of compassion, especially if it might lead us to take on a little suffering of our own in order to alleviate the suffering of our neighbors? Because we've been fed the steady diet of counter-narratives so that we are so ready to bow up and fight. We've allowed ourselves to believe that these are political fights and that a win for our side is the best way to heal our country. But let me tell you, there are stories about this one man. He was neither Democrat or Republican. It's not that he was too conservative for the Dems or too liberal for the Republicans. It's that he was not an American at all. Jesus from Nazareth, as his stories are told in the Gospels. He calls us to unity, to oneness, to compassion that is so antithetical to our partisan divisions that we should be blushing. Because his compassion is not based on ignoring the suffering that divides us. It is found in putting that suffering right at the very center. It is found not in pursuing pleasantness, but in dying to comfort so that we may rise to healing. The oneness Jesus offers makes the imagination of our nation seem petty until it serves the good of all people. Now, in one of the greatest snippets of all the Bible, there's this lawyer, after receiving Jesus' confirmation that he rightly understood the law of the demand to love your neighbor as yourself, he sought to justify himself by requesting a definition. And who is my neighbor? This lawyer snapped back at Jesus. He was asking, in effect, whom do I have to love? The lawyer pressed this question, we're told, to justify his stinginess of heart. He knew the seemingly impossible demands of the law of neighbor love. and he understood himself to be on the wrong side of the law, unless that law could be shrunk down to size. Like a good lawyer, he was looking for a loophole. Look, y'all, loving is hard enough, even when it comes to family and friends. But loving my neighbor as myself, that's only possible if all with a cramped definition of neighbor. The next door neighbor is fine, okay. Even the next door neighbor on the other side, that's okay. The backyard neighbor too. But surely Jesus doesn't want me to expand our definition of neighbor to include everyone? Everyone? Well, you know how the story ends up. Jesus tells the lawyer the story of the Good Samaritan. Someone is hurt, and they are ignored by all the people who are expected to show him mercy, and instead, the injured man is tended to by someone you least expect. Do not ask who your neighbors are. Ask who you are. To love your neighbor is to love Jesus himself. Amen.